Welcome back to the Philly Film Room podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about a couple of the first-round players at positions that we haven't gotten to already. So that includes offensive line, that'll include some edge rushers, and a couple other players. But before we get to that, we just want to say that we appreciate all the feedback that you guys have given us so far. We read all those comments and try to make the show as best as we can for you guys. Having said that, let's jump to a mailbag question first so we can answer one of our viewers' questions. Okay, so we had a viewer ask us a question, and the question is, what's worth more, a drafted tackle who sits for 2 years but is 80% of Lane Johnson, or a drafted guard who starts immediately because he's an upgrade over Steen but eventually goes out to tackle and is 60% of Lane? I thought this was a great question because it kind of gets us to think about the process a little bit differently, because I know a lot of people right now are thinking, hey, if we're going to take a tackle, let's make sure we get one with guard versatility so they can fill a need for us in the short term. And in my eyes, I think that's just bad process. If you're going to be selecting a tackle for the long term, you should be selecting the tackle that you think is the best available, whether that's in 3 years or 5 years. The draft is a place for finding long-term solutions, not a place for finding quick fixes. That's what free agency is for. So I don't think you want to take that 60% tackle just because they could play guard right away. Because guess what? In a couple years, when they are back out at tackle, you're going to be looking to replace them every chance that you get. So my answer, you want to find that 80% tackle if you can. And again, at the end of the day, you don't know what they're going to be. So in my eyes, I don't think we should be taking a tackle to find out in 2 or 3 years if they're going to be good, if they're going to end up sitting behind Lane Johnson the entire time. But that's just my thoughts on the situation.
Yeah, I totally agree. To me, it's kind of like you're dipping one foot in the water because you're saying immediately, we have a guy who can fill this hole that we have at guard, which, by the way, we may not actually have a hole. There's a lot of stuff coming out that suggests they might like Tyler Steen. And to speak to the tackle portion of it, of the chances that a guy who can play both guard and tackle, they're going to be better at the tackle portion, seems already pretty rare. And it also makes it hard for your team to make personnel decisions. So yeah, I'm totally agreed with you that if the goal is I need a tackle for the future, you just go for a bona fide tackle. There's rarely a guy who could do both with equal proficiency, and ultimately a tackle is more valuable. You're more likely to be able to have a stopgap guard that you can find in free agency, even on a cheap deal, than you are a surefire tackle.
Yeah, and you're wasting that value of a rookie contract if they don't even play for the first 2 or 3 seasons of that contract. You get 1 year to evaluate them, or possibly 2 years to evaluate them, and then if it's a first-round pick, you got to decide if you're using that fifth-year option or if you're going to sign them to a long-term contract. I just don't think that's a good process. Having said that, it is possible that the Eagles take a tackle, and we have yet to talk in depth about tackle options. Today, we're going to be talking about a couple of the tackles that could be in the Eagles' range when they pick. The first tackle that we're going to be talking about today is Troy Fatanu from Washington. I project Fatanu as someone that can and should play tackle, but has guard versatility. He's a short tackle, but he has good arm length to offset and very quick and agile feet. He's an easy mover in pass sets, and he has very springy feet, able to bounce and redirect and mirror with ease. He uses a variety of pass sets to give different looks, including a vertical jump set that he uses to throw off timing of edge rushers, and it really surprises them. He has great mobility in his hips, knees, and ankles, which allows him to play with good pad level and sync his center of gravity to redirect and mirror. He has excellent hand usage, he plays with independent hands, and will flash an outside hand to bait the pass rusher. And if you land a long arm on him, he will use a trap technique where he chops your arm down and knocks you off balance. And overall, I think he's a very solid pass protector. And the run game, he wins with quickness off the line of scrimmage and can overtake players that have him out-leveraged with ease. He is excellent tracking players at the second and third level on screens and in run game, and can be a weapon at the second level. Overall, he plays with good pad level. But I would say he's strong, but I wouldn't call him a mauler. He's definitely someone that wins with quickness in the run game. As far as his downsides go, he can be over-eager to strike and get off balance, often with his head over his toes, which allows him to get push-pulled. And it also leads to loss of strength and quickness when needing to redirect. He's inconsistent in his set depth, which leads to inside counters, and although he is able to offset this at times with his foot quickness to redirect, But he needs to be better and more consistent with this on the pros. It also takes him a few extra steps to set his anchor. And he's also more likely to use trap techniques against bull rushes than he is to try to sink his hips and anchor. Overall, if the Eagles go with the tackle, Troy Fatanu makes a lot of sense. I think he can become a high-end tackle in the league while providing versatility to play inside from day one. I don't know if he'll ever become a top five tackle in the league just because I don't think he has that high-end strength that you need at that position to anchor really well. But I think he can be a very good pro that wins with quickness and hand usage to go along with the ability to be a weapon in the run game.
Yeah, I've heard a few Eagles fans say that they're a little bit scared because Dillard, it was also a criticism of him that he had trouble dropping his anchor, and it's the same pick that he was taken with. So maybe there's a little bit of like bad vibes there. But do you envision that becoming a problem as it did with Dillard?
No, because I think that Troy is just much better with his hand usage. And it's not like he can't set an anchor. It just takes him a few extra steps. And so the pocket just might be a little tighter than a guy like the guy we're going to talk about next. When he puts his hands on you, he drops his hips. It's game over. He stops the rush right away. But with Troy, you just got to understand there's going to be times where you might have to be aware that he's going to give a little bit of extra space before he sinks in. You know who's really good with this is Rashawn Slater. Now, I'm not saying that Troy is as strong as Slater. Slater's extremely strong. But there's times where he gets pushed back a good amount because he has shorter arms, and it's taking him a few extra steps to get his hooks in so that he can sink his weight and lift up. So the point is, even if he does give up more ground, he usually is able to set his anchor. I think his bigger issues, more so, as he gets over-aggressive with the strikes, and he'll get off balance, and that's when you start to see people hitting him with inside counters or giving him push-pull moves.
Yeah, it's great to hear. It sounds like a lot of his problems are something that are easily correctable with coaching, especially when you have the best offensive line coach in the NFL.
So let's jump into our next guy, and that is going to be Amarius Mims from the University of Georgia. Now, Mims is an incredibly toolsy player, but he has minimal playing experience, although he has very good tape and his limited action. He's a mammoth of a man at just under 6'8" and 340 pounds with 36-inch arms. For a person of his size, he has surprisingly good movement skills, although if you watch Mims and Troy back-to-back, you can kind of tell the difference. But for a guy that's 6'8", 340, I mean, he moves pretty well. Although he doesn't move as quick as Fatanu does, his length and his strength helps to make up for it. He's remarkably smooth and quick in his pass sets for his size, and he has a solid ability to redirect, but again, it's not elite compared to some of the quicker guys. However, his length and power in his punches helps to make up for that. He has great ability to sink his hips and anchor quickly, especially for a guy that tall, and for a guy that's a little high-waisted. But he is able to, once he sets his anchor on you, the rush is over. You're not moving him. He doesn't get pushed into the quarterback's lap often, and he pairs this with strong strikes, which often stuns players or knocks them off balance, especially linebackers. When they try and get up on the line of scrimmage and he hits them, it's like a jolt. They just go flying back. Again, for someone that is fairly young in their experience, his hand usage is pretty good. He has strong hands to latch on and control as well, and he's a mauler in the run game as his size and strength really overwhelms. Now, for his weaknesses, he has inconsistent depth and width in pass sets, which allows for inside counters. And he doesn't have the fastest feet to redirect, so he needs to get better playing inside out and not getting too deep in his pass sets. I feel like if he went against guys like Micah Parsons, those kind of players will give him a lot of trouble. He is a taller guy, so those guys that can get low and bend and move laterally pretty quickly are the guys that are going to give him problems, especially early in his career. His footwork also needs to be better in the run game, as he's often striking without a solid base, and his stance probably will need to get reworked as he often has to pivot out of his stance, especially as he moves left. It just makes it hard for him to hit his cutoff blocks on the backside. And on top of that, probably his biggest issue or the biggest concern is he doesn't have much experience. So he's kind of a hard player to project at the next level. But from the very little reps that you do see, you can tell that he can be one of the best offensive tackles in the league. They just don't make guys this big, this long, that strong. And he's in a slim built body. He's not like, he carries his weight well. He's not like a Vince Wilfork, where he's got half his body weights in his gut. He is a well-built guy, and that shows off in his athleticism. If I were the Eagles and I were going to take a guy to be the lane replacement, Mems would be my pick over this or Fatnu, because I think Mems has the higher upside. He's just a bigger player, stronger. He's better in the areas where you really need your offensive tackles to be good in. And just because he doesn't offer that guard versatility doesn't mean you should pass on this guy. I think Mems is the guy.
Yeah, and I'm no offensive line guru, but when I watch Mims, the first thing that struck me was that, and you mentioned this, his waist is extremely thin for someone who's 340 pounds. And I kind of coined him as the bouncer, where he'll just throw you out the club. And these kind of guys who the Hall of Fame level and Pro Bowl level tackles, a lot of those guys, they were extremely, you know, athletically or gifted with this incredible frame, and then they became more refined over time. But you can't teach that frame, and you can't teach that athleticism. So if you can chisel him into, you know, a really refined pass blocker and fix some of the stance issues you were mentioning, the sky's the limit for this guy. You know, it's, as we mentioned before, it wouldn't be an exciting pick because he's going to potentially ride the bench for a while. And then it's like, by the time you figure out if he's good or not, he might already be due for a new contract, which is kind of a buzzkill. But in just in terms of a prospect in a vacuum, he looks awesome.
Yeah, he's, again, if the Eagles pick a tackle, I think he's a guy that you go with. It just sets up perfectly for them to go with Mems. Now, like you said, I don't think this is the way that they should go. I think there's better roster building management that can take place. So let's jump to a couple other players at other positions. I know you had some players that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so if you look at the Vegas odds for the most likely position that Eagles are going to take, O-line's way up there, cornerback's way up there, but also edge rusher. And when it comes to edge rusher, I really am only looking at one, potentially two guys as options at 22. One of those guys is Leiatu Latu. Now, if he fell to 22, it would pretty much be based purely on medicals. Everyone agrees this guy's film grade is top 10, essentially. And the positional scarcity for edge in this draft specifically is so high that that potentially pushes him up even more. But for, if anyone doesn't know, he was medically retired from football because of a neck injury, had like fusion surgery, but he's been injury-free in the two years since then. Now, just in terms of him as a player, he's a very unique pass rusher, especially at the college level, because he is extremely refined in his pass rush arsenal. You probably couldn't even count up all the moves that he has. Now, he also has what I would describe as potentially not even a real move, but he uses to win a lot, where he kind of just makes himself skinny. And like this is often when he's working on the inside, because he can play inside and outside. He'll just make himself skinny and then just skirt in between like the guard and tackle and just be in the backfield. So there's not really a move other than just like being agile, which is incredible because he's like 6'5". You know, he's got really good bend. Once he actually gets in the backfield, he's converting his pressures to sacks very often because his pursuit abilities are so good, and he can just, you know, extend his full body and wrap up and tackle. I believe he has a rugby background, which definitely helps you with some of that tackling ability. So one of the things I've heard as like a weakness, there's a couple of them. One is he can get out physical in the run game, which, you know, for a guy who's 6'5", he is a little bit thinner, especially in the lower half. It almost looks like he has tight end legs. So, and that's something you're going to live with. Now, with the fronts the Eagles will be running, some of those concerns are mitigated. But also, in the few times he did it, he looked unbelievable dropping into pass coverage. We're talking he's staying within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage. But if he's out in the flats or just in kind of like this QB spy area where he can, I mean, he's very long, he's high reactive, and he looks like he has really soft hands. So like it would not surprise me at all if he's a guy who like knocks down a fair bit of passes and maybe even gets a few interceptions here and there over his career. One other thing I would mention is he had a few snaps against Talese Fuaga, where he didn't necessarily show much, There wasn't that many snaps, and we're talking that guy's like a premier tackle prospect. But I would give some weight to the fact that when he faced the best competition, also Jordan Morgan, he wasn't nearly as productive. I think that's the case for any prospect, that they're not going to have the same success against the top guys. Some could construe that as a knock on him. But for someone coming to the NFL with, and I didn't even go through all the moves, the cross chop, the swipe move. He even has a little bit of like a long arm move. The just turning his body and getting skinny so you can't get his hands on him. There's probably a bunch of others that you can name. You don't see that coming out of college. So in that sense, this, how translatable he is and how quickly he could have good production, that I think that's something is definitely in the cards for him.
Yeah, and one more thing I just want to add, because that was a great breakdown. Go and look at him, his stats and his measurables next to Nick Bosa. He has a higher win rate and pass rush win rate in their last year in college. Bosa got hurt his last year, so I took his year before that. But then look at their measurables. I think Bosa might be about 5 pounds heavier, but they're almost the same height. Their testing skills was almost the exact same. Their RAS scores were nearly identical. And again, like you said, he's not just winning off of beating guys with speed around the edge. He's incredibly skilled, which is what Bosa was coming out of college. Now, I'm not saying Latu is going to be Bosa, but obviously there's the neck injury concerns. But if he did this in the Big Ten, I mean, I feel like we're talking about Latu as a much higher pick than someone that's going to fall to the mid to late 20s. You know, now again, Bosa did that in the Big Ten, so maybe that is what the separator is here. But when you start to look at it, guys that are that big, that athletic, and that skilled, there's a lot of similarities between the two players.
Yeah, and I think one of the main ways I would distinguish them is Bosa's probably better suited to be down in a stance, and he'll get a little bit of more like built up momentum and convert it into power, collapsing the pocket. Whereas I believe Latu's much better suited as a stand up rusher. But if he can have that kind of impact, I think that's plausible. And if you feel that good about a projection, I think a lot of times guys who are dominant edge rushers in college, and you can fact check me on this, generally, that does just show up in the NFL. Compared to the other positions, I feel like edge is pretty predictable.
If you're athletic and you have skill, that carries, that translates. So my point is, I'm not saying he's going to be Bosa. I mean, there's a reason why Bosa's going first overall and Latu isn't. But it makes you feel better about your projection that, hey, I can see some similar things in these guys and just how skilled they were at their athletic standing. You know, so it makes you feel better as opposed to taking a guy like potentially Chop Robinson, tremendous athlete, but you have to project his skills. You have to project he's going to get better. Latu, it's like he's going to come in day one knowing how to set up his moves. And he has multiple moves. It's not just I'm coming in and I'm beating you with a long arm. It's like I got this move, I got that move. Like you said, one of Nick Bosa's moves coming out of college was the double swipe. And that's a move that Latu hits with ease. Just my thoughts on it. But I think you had one more player that you wanted to get to.
Yeah, I think this was some feedback from our first video where we talked about first round corners, and then we just left Kool-Aid out of there. And if you look at his draft projection, it's declined considerably since the start of the pre-draft process. A lot of that is due to the Jones fracture. And also there was concerns about his long speed, and then he kind of put that to bed by running a 4.47 at the pro day. Now, I in previous discussions with Nick and I think there is a potential that we're going to disagree on Kool-Aid, so I'll kind of just talk about him, and then we'll see what our differences are. There's no doubt at all that Kool-Aid has a strong knack for the position. He looks like he's been playing corner his whole life. If you're just having him try to mirror receivers, he can do that in an elite level, I would say. I'm never going to knock that ability. But there were some things that stood out to me that I considered to be potentially big knocks on him. When we were talking about Nate Wiggins, people said, yeah, but he's 173 pounds and he shows no willingness in the run game. Now, Kool-Aid has 15 plus pounds on Wiggins, but he also exhibits that same quality. There was numerous games where I see him just willingly get blocked. And it's not that he's like a quote unquote terrible tackler. I don't think he is. I think he's a fine tackler. I think he just doesn't show enough want to, effort, drive, competitiveness in open field tackling. When it comes to block shedding, I don't think he's not physical enough or tries hard enough to shed blocks. I think he's always dependent on the sideline to try to shove guys out. Now, of course, if you can just easily shove a guy out or there's a big collision there, that's obviously preferable, but I thought it was almost to a fault at times. And Kool-Aid always said, I feel like I'm the tone setter on the defense. I'm a leader on the defense. I get the defensive back room charged up. And sure, if all that's true, those are great qualities to exude. But then on film, you are not showing 100% on all these plays where you could potentially make a difference. Now, is that something that could just easily be fixed? Yeah, you could just say, hey, Kool-Aid, you don't get on the field unless we see more effort on this play. And like I said before, he is a capable tackler. So it's definitely fixable, but it was something that I raised my eyebrows at. In terms of the coverage stuff, I mean, pretty much teams were not throwing at him this year. And you could check the stats on this, but I believe before this year, he was like leading the nation in pass breakups. And then the opponents realized this guy is like a dominant corner. So they're just like, oh, we're going to throw to the other side. And now all the ball production went to Terrion Arnold, and Kool-Aid didn't see many targets at all. There was just a few little hiccups I saw, like in the Texas game. He got cooked on a little slant route in the end zone, and then he got beat on like one deep route, but nothing that was too egregious. So yeah, in general, there wasn't that much tape. But actually, something I'm curious to hear your thoughts on is, it seems that he's extremely refined in press man technique, which is not expected to be a high frequency technique used for the Eagles next year. And does that kind of mitigate the impact that he could have if the Eagles drafted him?
I don't think he is the best player in off coverage because he just doesn't take most of his reps there. I feel like if he did have more experience doing that, he'd be good in those and playing off coverage as well. He's fluid. He has fluid hips. He's got enough athleticism to be a good zone cover corner. And he's been starting in a Nick Saban defense since he was a freshman. I mean, he's not a dumb guy. He knows, he's very intelligent football wise. I think some of your concerns are valid in terms of him not wanting to mix it up. Usually when I saw that, it was more so of like, he's playing the press man. He's traveling with this guy down the field. Always kind of being lazy, not getting back in the play, as opposed to being a guy that's like, he's got eyes in the backfield, can come up and make a tackle. But yeah, he's not the guy that's going to go out there and be known as the biggest hitter. Now, there are plenty of reps on film where tight ends have come to take him on, and he's shed and beat those blocks and made tackles. And I've seen him step up and make tackles plenty of times, but in previous conversations we've had, a lot of the times it's in short yardage situations. To me, it's not an issue of can he do it. It's just, is he going to put that effort in to get in there every play? Maybe he does better at that playing in a defense where you can have eyes in the backfield and you're not constantly running down the sideline with your guy in coverage. In terms of his coverage, though, I mean, he's been one of the most consistent players year to year in terms of just how I rank corners, the scores that I give them in terms of their production in college. But even if you want to look at things like his yards per target allowed, That's in the top, both years, the past 2 years, he's been in the top 80th percentile of all the corners drafted in the past 5 years. When I go through and look at a lot of these guys' numbers, even some players that have been really good in the NFL, they have a really strong final season in college, and it's a steady build up to that number. But Coolidge has been consistent pretty much every single year. And like you said, when he was getting targeted more last year, he had a ton of pass breakups. This year, he was, his percentage of snap coverage snaps where he was targeted was a third lowest since the 2020 draft class. So you're right, teams weren't targeting him. They were going after Terrion Arnold, and there's a reason. I mean, he was just a much better cover guy than Arnold was. And I think it has become a little bit of a, there's become a gap in their perceptions. I think everyone's looking at Arnold as he's this lockdown corner, when I think right now Kool-Aid's the better cover corner, but Arnold's better in the extra stuff, the run game stuff, the screen game stuff. So it's where do you value that, and who do you think can become the better player?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things people bring up is Kool-Aid had hardly any interceptions. And I think this is a valid criticism. There were times where he was in perfect coverage, right in the hip pocket of the receiver, but he just doesn't turn his head around. And my guess, this is speculating, is he's looking at the eyes and hands and seeing if the receiver is giving any tells away when the ball's coming, and so he can easily swat it away. But it's like there was a few times where he had more than enough time where had he just got the head around, he probably would have had the interception. It's unclear how coachable that is, but I totally agree with you. And just preparing for this podcast, I went and watched some more Kool-Aid, because I watched a ton of him early in the process, and then I hadn't watched a fair bit until recently. And he's just dramatically more sticky as a cover corner than Arnold. There's so many plays, pretty much every single game I watched, where Arnold's getting gapped by the guy he's covering. He's getting twisted around and facing the wrong way, and a guy's doing like a speed out, and there's 10 yards of separation. Or he's like a little bit late to flip his hips, and a guy's like 10 yards behind him, or they run some double move. And a lot of those, the QBs, they were going somewhere else. So even though he gave up like quite a bit of yards, it could have been even worse. So yeah, if you're looking for a guy who's just going, who you can just depend on in coverage, I mean, Kool-Aid to me is like orders of magnitude better than Arnold. But as we mentioned before, Arnold has the tools to improve considerably. I would not kind of knock his upside, because it's definitely there, but he might be a project player where it takes several years before he shows what he's capable of. Whereas Kool-Aid, he's going to come in and day one, he could probably be a cornerback two for you that you're not too worried about.
Yeah. And you made a point earlier about, you know, Arnold had a lot more pass breakups than Kool-Aid did, but that's because he's getting targeted more. So I feel like what's going on right now is a lot of people are getting to see that all these cool pass breakups and plays on the ball that Arnold had, because he's getting targeted so much more. But here's the thing. Kool-Aid this past season was, his forced incompletion rate was 19th out of 180 whatever players that have been drafted over the past 5 years. Arnold had a better forced incompletion rate in 2022. He's 41st. This past season, he was 85th or 84th, excuse me. So he just saw a lot of volume. So a lot of people got to see Arnold breaking up passes, making plays on the ball. But it's harder to make like interesting content about a guy that's just, he's not getting targeted because he's covering his guys. And it's like, well, if the quarterback threw him the ball, he probably was going to break it up. But I can't make a highlight video out of that. So what am I supposed to do? I feel like maybe the NFL might be a little higher on Arnold, that's on Kool-Aid than like draft Twitter is.
There's one position where I don't want the highlight video to be a long amount of time, and that's corner. Yeah. Right? It's like, why is there so many highlights? These teams were just throwing at this guy the entire season. So yeah, I think we're totally aligned on that.